It is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonah Schaefer on a Friday. We've got a two podcast week here for you. We had to hop on to talk about some Kyle Van Noy re-signing with the Ravens news. We're going to get to that in a bit. We also are going to talk to the 33rd team's Dan Pizzuta to talk about the wide receivers in this year's draft class. Last week, we did the offensive linemen. If you want to go back and listen to that, I would highly suggest it. We got wide receivers. We're going to cover defense at some point soon. But Jonas, the biggest, most impactful part of the Ravens bringing back Kyle Van Noy is that our free agency bracket runner-up has now re-signed with the Ravens, which means that one of our final four teams is back, and I think we deserve some credit for this.
So we've had a pool. Should we have made this a March Madness pool? Because yeah. I think we'd be in the money right about now.
We would. And the Final Four is happening this weekend too, so it all works out. Jonas, let's talk about Kyle Van Noy coming back to the Ravens on a two-year, $9 million deal that could be up to $10 million if he reaches certain incentives. Were you surprised, first and foremost, that this was a two-year deal and not a one-year deal, which is what Van Noy signed last year when the Ravens picked him up essentially off the couch in September?
Yeah, a little bit, just because you look at his recent contract history, it's just been a lot of one-year stops. I think before he got to Baltimore, including Baltimore, it was maybe three teams in 3 years or 4 years and four teams. So for the Ravens to give him a two-year deal, a little surprising, but again, don't overreact to the big headline of this being 2 years, $9 million, 2 years, $10 million, because we don't know what the structure of this deal is. And that's going to tell us a lot about just how easy it is to get out from underneath it if the Ravens need to. Just like with Derrick Henry, you know, that was a two-year $14 million deal, two-year $16 million deal, for something like that. But
16,
yeah. In actuality, the Ravens have a pretty easy way of getting out of that and making that pretty manageable. So don't overreact if you're not in love with the signing. Personally, I think it's good value, just like pretty much every other deal that Eric DaCosta has handed out this year. The only real deal that I think you can say that he kind of paid market value for was Justin Madubuike, and even that was defensible because he got out ahead of Christian Wilkins getting his deal on the open market. So I think another tip of the hat to Eric DaCosta for getting this deal done. There wasn't a whole lot of talent out there on that edge rusher market. I think Emmanuel Ogba was the only guy on the NFL.com's top 101 free agents still available. For the Ravens to get a guy who was, top 30 in pass rush win rate last year on PFF, who's coming off a career high in sacks, who was able to rush from the outside, from the inside, obviously be a veteran presence in that locker room that's looking pretty green right now, in the same way that, Odell and Nelson Agholor wore the elder statesman of that wide receiver room last year. I don't think there's, a plausible way that you could be upset about this deal. And I think it's good business, and it's definitely striking at a position of need.
The Ravens hit on so many of these one-year deal guys last offseason. Jadeveon Clowney was obviously another big one. Kyle Van Noy in the defensive secondary. You had Arthur Mollett was one of those guys. Ronald Darby. And the tough part for Eric DaCosta is determining which of their success is going to be repeatable. And for Kyle Van Noy, it is certainly a gamble because he's 33 years old and had 9 sacks last year, but that was a career high in 14 games. And yes, he's playing in the same style defense, but with a different defensive coordinator now, no longer Mike McDonald there. And he's going to have maybe a little bit less talent around him. Is he going to be able to repeat that kind of production? Probably won't get 9 sacks again, but they are betting that he is not going to fall off a cliff. And they're doing the same thing with Arthur Mollett by bringing him back on a 2-year deal. Just looking at the reported numbers before we know the specifics about the guaranteed money, about the potential out after this year, Kyle Van Noy signed for a deal of the same length, but for about half as much money as Jadeveon Clowney signed. 2 years, $20 million for Clowney in Carolina. So Van Noy was obviously the cheaper option, which made a lot of sense because Van Noy's older. He has less of a track record of success. But this move was about raising the floor of the pass rush. And now you have Odafe Owe, Justin Madubuike, Michael Pierce, David Ojabo, Kyle Van Noy, Travis Jones, Brent Urban along that defensive line. You have Roquan Smith, who can blitz from the linebacker spot, Trenton Simpson, who can do the same. Do the Ravens have enough And for a team that led the NFL with 60 sacks last year, how much could this group produce in 2024, Jonas?
Well, I want to look upward to our neighbors across the Mason-Dixon line. The Eagles last year, they brought pretty much everyone back from that pass rush group, I think, aside from Javon Hargrave. And that was a group that the year before was just out of this world good in sack protection. So, you know, even if the Ravens had found a way to bring back Clowney, get Ajabo healthy, get Owe to take a next step, get Madubuike to be as consistent, there was no guarantee that the Ravens were coming anywhere close to 60 sacks. Think of just how many situations the Ravens found themselves in last year that were conducive to getting sacks. It was a lot of third and longs. It was a lot of obvious passing situations because the Ravens were blowing teams out. It was Mike McDonald throwing splitters and curveballs and junk pitches that these other coordinators just had not seen, or these quarterbacks had not seen. None of that would have been sustainable into 2024 because so much of that was just this once in a blue moon type team. You know, I think this is something that we can probably talk about after the draft, but like, how many positions on the team right now could you say are definitively better than they were at the end of last season? Like, there's not really
running back, maybe.
Maybe running back, maybe safety. If you say, like, you know, you're banking on a full season of Marcus Williams, but then again, you're losing that third safety versatility with Chino Stone gone. So even though pass rush is this glamorous position, and deservedly so, you look at how much these guys are getting paid, especially the folks at the top of the market, and it makes sense to concentrate on it. But going into this draft, you know, the draft is the lifeblood of the team. Like, you know, it's such a cliche and obvious thing to say, but it's true, because just look around this team, look at this depth chart, and ask yourself, where are the Ravens actually better? And it's pretty grim, because I don't know if there's anywhere that you could say that they are definitively better than they were last year.
Yeah, I still think the Ravens will invest some draft capital in the pass rush. Probably not a day one pick. I still think they go with offensive line, but maybe a day two pick in the second or third round. You talk about positions that have taken a step back. We've talked about the wide receiver position a little bit on this podcast, and we're going to dive deep into it today as well. Why the Ravens could be targeting a wide receiver early in the draft, which takes place in less than 3 weeks. They have Zay Flowers, obviously, coming back, coming off a very nice rookie season. They have Rashad Bateman entering the last year of his contract, essentially. They are relying on Nelson Agholor to be the veteran in that room. Outside of those three guys, they could probably use just a little bit more. They could use some depth. They could use another high upside piece, considering, you know, it's just Zay Flowers in that room after this year, most likely. So let's dive into the potential picks for the Ravens. I think Marvin Harrison Jr., Ohio State and St. Joe's Prep's own Marvin Harrison Jr., is going to be out of their range. Malik Nabers from LSU is going to be out of their range. Rome Odunze, who I mentioned months ago, everybody else hopped on the Rome Odunze train, and he has now flown up draft boards out of Washington. He is probably going to be a top 10 pick. And then one other guy who might be in the middle of the first round, who I just don't see falling to 30, is Brian Thomas Jr., another LSU wide receiver. So that leaves four or five guys that could be in range for the Ravens with the number 30 overall pick in a draft that is incredibly deep in wide receiver, just as deep in wide receiver as it is in offensive line. That aligns nicely with the Ravens' needs. But the five guys that we're going to talk about today here, Jonas: A.D. Mitchell out of Texas, Keon Coleman out of Florida State, Xavier Worthy out of Texas, Ladd McConkey out of Georgia, and Troy Franklin out of Oregon. And Jonas, last week we did food comps because offensive linemen like to eat. You came up with the idea of doing an Orioles prospect comps for these wide receivers. And I also do another podcast called the Banner Baseball Show at least once a week on thebaltimorebanner.com, where you can subscribe $1 for 6 months. But it's a great show. All right, let's talk about A.D. Mitchell out of Texas. This, to me, is a guy that I would like to compare to Heston Kerstad, because Heston Kerstad is going to mash homers. He's got incredible raw power, but he needs to refine some areas of his game, like defense, like cutting down on whiffs. A.D. Mitchell has a lot of great tools. 6'2", 205. He's got ideal size. He's got very solid speed. He had 55 catches for 845 yards last year and 11 touchdowns in 14 games. He played his first 2 years at Georgia before transferring over, so he won a couple national championships. The question is, can he put it all together? Can he marry all of his incredible skills? He's not a route running technician like Jerry Jeudy or Devontae Smith were coming out of college. And the other questioning, this is not for Heston Kerstad. This is where the comparison leaves something to be desired, because I think Heston Kerstad is a very engaged player who works very hard. The question for A.D. Mitchell is, how engaged is he when he is not getting the ball?
Only number that I would throw your way in the way of it, the A.D. Mitchell talk, is his yards per route run, which, you know, we've talked about is a pretty good metric for measuring productivity given the opportunities that you're actually afforded. In college, 1.68, which is just out of this world bad for a first round prospect. And, you know, he played at Georgia, went to Texas, and playing with a gifted, if inconsistent, quarterback in Quinn Ewers, playing, you know, alongside Xavier Worthy and a lot of other good weapons on that Texas offense. So, you know, maybe you're saying possibly there were just guys draining targets from him. You know, maybe he was running good routes and just not getting the ball. But for him to be this athletic, this talented, this freakish in his athleticism, and only average 1.68, anything under 2 is pretty worrisome for a wide receiver prospect. So
yeah,
you are doing a whole lot of projection with a guy like A.D. Mitchell that he is going to be a number one, number two level prospect.
His highlight reel is fun to watch, and you could see a lot of those skills, but it's on a game in and game out basis that you really start to get concerned when you're watching A.D. Mitchell. Another Texas wide receiver that you mentioned is Xavier Worthy. My comp for him is Enrique Bradfield Jr., who you may know as the Orioles' first round pick from last July's draft. Enrique Bradfield Jr. stole 130 bases in 3 years at Vanderbilt and has an 80 grade speed. That's the kind of speed we're talking about when we talk about Xavier Worthy. 6'1", 160. So he is a small guy. He is not very physical. He is going to have to rely on beating guys off the line of scrimmage and being thrown a lot of deep balls. And he was very successful at Texas in doing that. 75 catches for over 1,000 yards, had 5 touchdowns, broke the combine record for the fastest 40 time, 4.21. But Jonas, he is skinny and he doesn't play any bigger than his size. You know, some guys like Devontae Smith are skinny, but they're wiry strong. I'm not sure that Xavier Worthy fits that category. And when you're talking about what the Ravens might need, separation is obviously key for any wide receiver, but that also takes a little bit of play strength. It's not just your ability to run past guys. It's your ability to push guys off in legal ways and get open. And I'm not positive that Xavier Worthy has that in his bag at this point.
I'm not out on speed when it comes to drafting Ravens prospects, but when you think of the tortured history of the Ravens drafting wide receivers in the first round, Rashad Perriman, speed demon, couldn't stay healthy, yes, but also couldn't really get open. Marquise Brown, also bedeviled by injuries, but again, never really lived up to that run away from you potential that you saw on tape at Oklahoma. Rashad Bateman, you know, he was a more progressive pick in the sense that he didn't need to be a burner, even though he did a 4.4 speed to separate from guys. And we've seen when he's healthy, you know, that ability to kind of change gears, change direction, work to his advantage, even if the production hasn't been there. And then Zay Flowers, you know, I think people forget that he was only like a low 4.4s guy. He wasn't, despite his smaller stature, a burner in the Xavier Worthy sense. And he's been more of a guy who wins with his feet, who wins with his change of direction. And again, you know, you saw that finally bear out in his production. So not to say that, you know, the bust potential for Xavier Worthy is especially high because of that speed. He was a, you know, terrific performer at Texas. If you just look at his year-to-year production from the moment he stepped foot in Texas, he was, you know, I think a 700 plus yard guy every season. But I think for the Ravens, considering what their needs are and who might be on the board at number 30, it's not worth the squeeze to me.
Nice pun. One guy that I like a whole lot in this draft, Jonas, Keon Coleman from Florida State, who played his first 2 years at Michigan State. This is the opposite of Xavier Worthy. This is a big dude. He is 6'4", 210. and he plays very big. He has an incredible catch radius. He goes up and gets the ball. You think of guys like Drake London, Allen Robinson, guys that you can just lob the ball up to and he'll make a catch on. Was playing also with quarterback Jordan Travis at Florida State, who I like for the Ravens. We'll talk about him on a later podcast. Nice mid-round pick maybe as a backup quarterback for Lamar Jackson. My comparison for Keon Coleman is going to be Kobe Mayo, who is strong as an ox, who is a big third baseman. Now, does he need to improve some areas of his game, like defense over at third base? Perhaps. And, you know, is there a little bit of swing and miss in his game? Sure. However, it's hard to watch him play and hit long, long homers and think that this guy is not going to succeed in Major League Baseball. And by the same token, I watched Keon Coleman make unbelievable catches at Florida State. One of them was a one-handed leaping catch over the middle of the field against Syracuse, which was in a game where he had 9 catches for 140 yards and a touchdown to break the hearts of my Syracuse Orange. It's hard to watch those highlights and think this guy is not going to succeed in the NFL.
I think I was going to talk about this later, but I think we can talk about it now. Just like the idea of what Derrick Henry might mean for someone like Keon Coleman. You know, you bring in Derrick Henry, and the hope is that he makes life easier for Lamar Jackson by inviting these heavy boxes. You know, are these opposing defenses going to drop that safety into the box because they fear a Derrick Henry handoff? They fear a Lamar Jackson, you know, read option keeper. And if so, if you're the Ravens and you're anticipating that, boy, it sure would be nice to have a ball winner at that X receiver position. According to SIS, back shoulder fades, outside receivers. Lamar has attempted one back shoulder fade. One. And it was to Odell last year against the Cardinals, and it was incomplete. So wow. If I'm Eric DeCosta, I don't want to overinvest and like reach for a Keon Coleman, because again, like we mentioned, there's a possibility that Derrick Henry is only here for 1 year in Baltimore. And maybe that's a year where Keon Coleman needs a long windup to actually get good and be a guy who can throw these 50-50 balls and have him turn them into 80-20 balls. But I think that is something that is interesting to look out for. It's like, do the Ravens take a swing on an X receiver because you are going to have all that space where it's just one deep safety, single high. You don't have to worry about them kind of coming over and disrupting stuff on these passes that Lamar has not thrown. We think can throw, you know, probably not his greatest strength right now, but right. I'm just kind of fascinated by that facet of what Derrick Henry's addition to this offense means for what the Ravens might look for in a wide receiver.
I just would like to see one of those receivers play with Lamar Jackson. I just want to see what it looks like. The question is it worth a first round pick? Because I think Keon Coleman is going to be probably an early second round pick at the latest. Is it worth taking that type of risk for a guy who you have some concerns about maybe his separation? I think that type of receiver might flourish with Lamar. It will often come down to how much does Lamar trust this guy? If Lamar is seeing that he's blanketed in coverage, is he still willing to throw the ball up and just trust that his 6'4 guy is going to go and get it? And it sometimes quarterbacks don't trust their wide receivers to do that. And it probably depends on who the wide receiver is and how much history they have together. But you would like to see a pairing like that just because you can think of the possibilities. I'd like to see it. And that's why I probably have him at the top of my board in terms of who might be available for the Ravens, but I understand the concerns about separation. All right, other guys that might be considered here. Ladd McConkey had a few injuries last season, so his stats aren't as gaudy as some of the other guys in this category. He missed some games with back and ankle injuries, 30 catches for fewer than 500 yards, 2 touchdowns in 9 games. From everything that scouts say, he is an excellent route runner. He's a redshirt junior. He's 6'1", 186, so not huge. Does drop some deep balls, which is a concern as well. But he doesn't have the eye-popping tools that Xavier Worthy or Keon Coleman or A.D. Mitchell have. And that's why I'm comparing him to an Orioles, no longer a prospect technically, but a recent prospect, Jordan Westberg. Westberg did not have the power that Heston Kerstad had. He does not have the defense that Joey Ortiz had. However, he marries all of his skills very nicely, and he does the little things right, which is what I feel Ladd McConkey did at Georgia.
He's still got some juice. I know he doesn't have, you know, Keon Coleman's size or Xavier Worthy's speed, but he's a 4.39 guy at, what, 186 pounds. That's awfully impressive. You know, the NFL.com prospect page has his athleticism score as a 90 out of 99 or 100. So that's good. I think he would be a consideration for me at number 30 if I'm the Ravens. I do wonder and worry a little bit about his medicals. There's obviously the connection that we haven't mentioned to Todd Monken. I think he did a recent hit on, Vlad did a hit on, I think, Kay Adams' show, and, you know, mentioned that Todd Monken was great for him. He really knows how to put receivers in a position to succeed. And, you know, Vlad is a guy who can drop in anywhere. I think he's a lot like Rashad. I think he's a lot like Zay, where you can set him off as that X and you know, ask him to go win downfield. You can put him in motion. You can, you know, have him be, you know, on the strong side of the field and work that way. You know, he's going to be valued and treasured because of that versatility and because he has that, you know, route running polish that is pretty unique after that top trio of receivers. So it would not surprise me, nor would it disappoint me, if the Ravens were to take Ladd at number 30. But it wouldn't also surprise me to see him maybe slip into like the late 30s, maybe the mid 40s, and perhaps that puts him in a range where the Ravens say, you know what, we're comfortable that with our number of draft picks, we don't mind spending one to move up 20 spots or so and go get this guy.
And last but not least, Troy Franklin from Oregon, the opposite of McConkey in that he has gaudy numbers. 1,383 yards, 81 catches last year, 14 touchdowns in 13 games. For the same reason that scouts are hesitant to move Bo Nix up draft boards simply because of his numbers, I think fans should be equally hesitant to move Troy Franklin up simply because his numbers are that much better than everybody else. That Oregon offense just produces insane numbers and will always make wide receivers look good. And you do see occasionally some good wide receivers come out of Oregon, but you often see a lot of misses because they put up ridiculous stats. I'm not as high on Troy Franklin. Franklin, in terms of a Orioles prospect comp, Connor Norby, who I think is very useful. However, I don't know how useful he is to the Orioles. And in a same way, I think Troy Franklin is going to be a useful NFL player. I don't know how useful he would be for the Baltimore Ravens.
I think the Troy Franklin first round buzz has quieted, if not just completely fallen off the radar. He's not an overwhelming athlete, and a lot of his production was premised on screens and just kind of quick hitters and that Oregon offense, which obviously kind of accounted for Bo Nix's absurd completion percentage,
right?
You know, taking a lot of layups. So I think there's a lot of projection when it comes to Troy Franklin and imagining what he could be at that next level, because there's just not there's not as much evidence of him running the kinds of routes or doing the kind of things that you would need to feel good about taking him at number 30 overall.
So those are the guys that we think would make sense for the Ravens at number 30 overall. And there are plenty of other guys in the second, third rounds that might make sense as well. And to catch up and get a deeper dive into all of these guys that we mentioned, and even some that we haven't, we caught up with Dan Pizzuto. Let's throw it back to that interview right now.
We are delighted to have, for our second draft installment, focus on wide receivers today, Dan Pizzuto, an NFL analyst for the 33rd team, formerly worked with Sharp Football Analysis, Football Outsiders Almanac, doing great work at the 33rd team, which with Derek Klassen, Greg Cosell, a lot of great stuff being pumped out, especially around draft time. Last week, Dan had an article on the golden age of wide receiver prospects. This is a good class to need a wide receiver. The Ravens definitely need a wide receiver. Dan, thanks for joining us. I guess to kind of start things off, what do you kind of think of when you have in your mind's eye what this Ravens wide receiver room could look like for 2024?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where since there is a lot of pedigree, and there always has been like a lot to like about those guys that are in that receiver room. You know, I was a fan of Rashad Bateman coming out, and he's just kind of one of those guys that you always are hoping there's just a little bit more from. So having kind of that up and down year last year is a little disappointing, but you always kind of do see a lot of those traits that you think can, you know, continue to build on. You look at Zay Flowers, and you know, he was a lot of fun when he was on the field last year. He was a guy that you kind of had to really trust his traits when you were looking at what he did in Boston College last year, because that offense was just, it was so bad. He was just getting overthrown all the time, but you know, he was getting open. So I think there's certain things like from both of those guys that you'll like and probably continue to improve upon as they have, you know, the second year in this offense. But yeah, you can never have too many wide receivers. And I would not say the Ravens have that problem right now. So adding to that, you know, no matter what their situation would be, would probably be a good idea.
Along those lines, Dan, this is an offense last year that when they had Mark Andrews healthy, when they had Isaiah Likely healthy, when they were playing together, 12 personnel worked really well for them, even though they were primarily a three wide, you know, kind of spread them out team. Is the importance of wide receiver to this Ravens receiving attack overstated because you have that nice foundation with Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely? I mean, do you see this offense, regardless of maybe what this team does in the draft, kind of shifting more to that two tight end formations of old, or do you think it's more in, you know, Todd Monken's wheelhouse to kind of keep things 11 personnel, more speed in the field, more horizontal stretch on the field?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of both there. And I think that is going to be one of the things that makes this Ravens offense kind of to work in the way it can be versatile, where you do have the two tight ends with Andrews and Likely. You do have a Patrick Ricard, who, you know, was supposed to be an offensive lineman, but kind of ended up being like a kind of de facto lineman, but still playing the tight end and still getting on the field like, significant amount of time when he was kind of supposed to be phased out, if we kind of, you know, went on what they were saying during training camp last year. So he's always going to be a guy that, you know, moves around a little bit. What you are still, you know, for a team that is going to be, you know, heavy in 12 or 21, you're still, you know, over 50% of the time, even for like the lowest teams in the league. I think only if you're like the Shanahan 49ers are you like really below 50% in 11 personnel. So right. It's still going to be a personnel grouping that's out on the field most of the time. So you would like to have, you know, a pretty solid three wide receivers if you can. And not every team can, but I think having some of those bigger bodies and some of those bigger personnel groupings does not make wide receiver less important, because it's still going to be out on the field quite a bit.
And in terms of what kind of wide receiver the Ravens should be looking for, we had a conversation earlier in the pod about it. I feel like scouts talk about flavors of prospects. You know, it's just depending on, a lot of guys are rated equally, and it's just which kind would you prefer? You've got Zay, who is so shifty. You've got Rashad Bateman, who can get open down the field. What kind of wide receiver, what prototype would you be looking for if you're looking to add to that room?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, especially for the Ravens, and I think just in general, I think just getting open is probably the skill that I like to see for receivers the most, because it's just, that's on the receiver, right? You can use, you know, speed and some of these like bigger body guys, it can kind of not quite translate as much. And some of those, you know, if you're really great at contested catches, why are you in so many contested catch situations? You know, that can be a thing that kind of goes more to the wide receiver's skill of like not really having the great skill that's going to translate outside of, you know, getting open is just a thing that, you know, usually does translate pretty well. So I think the Ravens have been smart in when they do target those kind of guys. Like Bateman is that kind of guy. You know, Flowers was that kind of guy. So I wouldn't be surprised if they still kind of target a guy whose, you know, main skill or something that they can see translate is getting open. You know, I think that's where they go. And especially for a team like the Ravens and with a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, where you're not necessarily going to always be using some of that quick game or need someone to be kind of like a check down type of player, because Lamar's legs are the check down. So you kind of don't always need someone to be like spamming that short area of the field, especially because you have a Mark Andrews or Isaiah Likely if you're going to be in 12 personnel a lot. So you kind of have that area of the field covered. So if you have a guy who can work that kind of intermediate area and has shown the ability to get open in there, like I think that's always going to be the type of guy the Ravens are looking at.
Dan, I have a take that I'm kind of workshopping. There's a lot of interests in Ravens world in AD Mitchell. I think he profiles like a Raven in that he is a wide receiver and he is fast and he looks really, really good on his highlights. My thing is, I don't think he actually plays like a Raven by the, you know, kind of hokey cliches of what we think playing like a Raven means. He, at least at Texas, did not run all of his routes at full speed. You know, some of that might have been just kind of a function of playing in that system with maybe some half field reads where he felt like he could take the playoff. Also not a good blocker despite his size. Are you kind of in step with me? Do you feel like what he is as a prospect in the intangible department does not really mesh with the kind of stated goals and values of like a Ravens first round pick, especially as someone at that wide receiver spot?
It's interesting, especially in the sense of kind of where the Ravens are picking, because I like dive into these prospects every year and kind of do a big piece on it, which, you know, one of the things looking at, like, this wide receiver class as a whole really does stand out and like lives up to the hype. The weird thing is the guys who are projected to go in that back half of the first round are the guys I'm kind of iffiest about. And I think Mitchell is one of those guys. You kind of look at what he has with that speed, and, you know, like you said, it is there. But the refined things about being a wide receiver are things that don't always show up. And I think, like, when you kind of see prospects that can potentially fail, it kind of is some of those, you know, speed guys who don't actually have the receiver things down on a consistent basis. And kind of speed is cool. I think among like positions, the wide receiver is the one I like really care the least about actual like raw speed, because it just doesn't really matter if you can't get open, if you're not using that in a good and consistent way. And I think we've seen plenty of really fast wide receivers who just haven't been able to, you know, translate that into an actual good skill. And you guys have like Keenan Allen, who's been in the league for, you know, over 10 years and ran like a 4.7. So there's so much to translate there. So when I kind of look at these wide receivers, I've put together a metric for what these receivers added to their offense, because college offenses are weird, right? There's so many different flavors of college offenses. So you kind of have to contextualize like what these guys are doing. Having 15 yards per target in one of like the most wide open pass heavy, you know, offenses is going to be much different than even there can be guys who were doing like 11 yards per target in a much like worse the offense, and the degree of difficulty is much higher. So I take a look at what these guys average on a yards per target basis, and then what the quarterback and the passing game averaged on throws to anyone else in the offense. And then you kind of just kind of subtract that, and you see how many kind of yards per play the receiver added. And Mitchell comes out negative, which is kind of one of the biggest red flags for guys who for prospects. When I look at this, there hasn't really been a lot of guys who were drafted in the first round who came out as negative. I think the two recently were Chris Olave and Jerry Jeudy, and those two guys. You know, Olave was a thing where he didn't have a lot of yards after the catch, and he was playing with two great wide receivers in his offense. And Jerry Jeudy was also playing with, you know, really good guys. And I think whatever you think of Jerry Jeudy, I wasn't very high on him. I'm still really not. So it's interesting. There have been like a couple of like moderate successes for guys that were come out negative here, but it's not very good. And so the Mitchell comes out there, Keon Coleman comes out there. So when you're like not adding something to your college offense, it raises a lot of questions of like what you're actually going to do, you know, in your NFL offense, because things are only going to get harder from there. So Mitchell's one of those guys where you just kind of look at his profile. If you're drafting him, if you are a team, you really have to be confident that you can put him in a position where some of that speed is going to translate, some of that effort is going to be there on a down-to-down basis. And if not, like, I think there's guys who are going to go in like the second or third round that I'll be a little more comfortable kind of with their profile than I am some of those guys that are projected to go in like the back part of the first.
And Dan, you mentioned Keon Coleman, a guy that I like, though. You know, he is exactly how you described, you know, a prospect that you might want to stay away from, which is doesn't get very open, but also can make insanely contested catches. And it leads you to ask, okay, why does he have to make all these contested catches? Is he not getting enough separation? But we've seen also like teams fall in love with guys like this, like Drake London, I remember, was a guy that I felt I was very worried about coming out because I was like, why does he have to make all these contested catches? Where do you think Keon Coleman falls in that kind of range of above the rim guys?
Well, I think if you like really looked at Drake London, like he was a better separator than I think he got a lot of credit for. And that was kind of the offense he was into because, you know, before the Caleb Williams, you know, they came into USC, that was not a great offense. So I think I wasn't as concerned about Drake London. And I think that was an extra skill that he had on top of some of the things. And I think we're still seeing him get open in Atlanta. And he just, again, definitely bad quarterback play has not worked. Coleman, it's not the same thing. I think he kind of is one of those guys who is not naturally the getting open. So the contested catch part is the feature of his game, which is tough. But he's one of these guys where I think if you kind of took him and made him like a power slot, the kind of guy where you kind of align him up inside, you can work him on slants and kind of use that big body to get him up because he can run after the catch for like as big as he is, he does have that skill. So I think there is a way that Keon Coleman does work in the NFL and you can kind of like manufacture some of those shorter passes and get him inside, use his body to kind of, you know, post up on things that are going to, you know, keep his momentum going down the field, not necessarily have, you know, those jump balls down the side. The thing is with the Ravens, I don't know how much you want to be plugging up the middle of the field when you already have, you know, the tight ends. Your tight end is basically your main slot receiver on a lot of plays anyway. So if his ideal position is kind of something the Ravens already have a little bit, I'm not totally sure what the fit is. But again, like, yeah, he is a guy that he does have that big body. He does have some traits that just kind of flash. It's just one of those things that it isn't as consistent as you might like to see for a team that's probably, you know, really going to need someone on the outside who can, you know, consistently get that separation. Still not sure if Coleman is going to be that guy.
Dan, let's get you out of here on this. Is there someone that you have just really taken a liking to as a day two, you know, whether it's the second round, third round prospect that you think, you know, might be available in that late 50, early 60 range, someone who the Ravens could look into? I mean, it seems like we're kind of at that point in the draft where everyone's starting to fall in love with Xavier Leggett. I know it's just a small sample size. I know he's kind of had a long run up to production, but is he a guy worth kind of taking a flyer on at that X position? Is someone like Ricky Pearsall out of Florida maybe the heir apparent for that, you know, wide receiver two spot, assuming that Rashad Bateman is entering his last year in Baltimore? I mean, is there someone that you really like who is maybe probably not going to be available in the 40s or 50s, but could be had by the Ravens at number 64?
Yeah, I mean, Leggett is a guy who stands out a lot with, you know, these numbers that I put together. He comes out number one in this class of like what he added to that South Carolina offense. And there was not a lot going on outside of him. And there were, you know, some manufactured touches that he had to take. There were a lot of screens and things. But, you know, he is a bigger body, but like 220 and runs real fast and, you know, has that ability to get open in that, you know, deep area, in that intermediate area. He's a guy, again, the cons on him is that, you know, he was the fifth year breakout, which a lot of people don't like. But the breakout happened, and I think that's very cool to see, especially when like he was a guy who did not have a lot of experience at wide receiver. I think he was asked to play quarterback like his senior year of high school. There was a bunch of, you know, things that kind of hampered his development a little bit when he kind of came into college to play receiver. But to watch some of the things that he was able to do last year, it comes out really well. He's a guy I like a lot. Malik Washington of Virginia is another guy I really like and have kind of fallen in love with. I don't want to say like Steve Smith is, especially, you know, Ravens fans know. Like,
got to be careful with the name. Yeah.
Yeah. He's great, but like he plays in that way. And, you know, talking to him a little bit at the combine for, you know, some of those media pressers, and he was like, I watch Steve Smith a lot. And, you know, he's a shorter guy. He's like 5'8". He might have to, you know, play this slot only, but he's a guy, I think he can play the outside. He is a physical guy for his size. You can kind of see this Steve Smith influence in his game. I'll say that because, you know, you're not going to comp anyone to Steve Smith, but you can see that he is a guy who has studied Steve Smith like at that size too. So not a good passing offense in Virginia. So he was a guy who kind of took advantage of just kind of, he was the only thing. If he wasn't taking a ball, you know, down the field, and he can do that in many different ways and get open. He's exciting to watch. So I don't know if they, you know, want to go with another small guy for Baltimore when you kind of already have Zay Flowers. That's kind of taken a size element out of the receiving core. But he's a really fun guy. You know, there's guys like, you know, Javon Baker, Jermaine Burton, pretty good deep threats who come out well, and Jalen Coker from Holy Cross. He's an FCS guy, but he completely dominated when he was playing in FCS. So he's a guy that, you know, they kind of tested pretty well, like fairly athletic. He's not like a Christian Watson athletic when he came out of FCS a couple years ago, but he's a guy who I think when you kind of look at what his profile is, it's based on route running, and he's a guy who is able to get open. So like, he's a guy, I'm not sure how highly he's going to get drafted, but he's someone who I wouldn't be surprised if the Ravens have some interest in, is kind of that undervalued, you know, the FCS guy who just kind of, you know, gets open. He has a trait that translates. So I think like he could be another person, you know, probably day three on this point, but he could be a fun player to watch also.
And if the Ravens draft him, we can try to get Bill Simmons on the pod to talk about what he saw from watching Holy Cross football. So
yeah, I mean, probably the only person who like really watched him before the draft started.
That'd be awesome.
Dana, appreciate you being on with us. You know, as always, check out your stuff on the 33rd team, pumping out great stuff, not just on draft, but on all the happenings of free agency. I believe you had a Stephon Diggs article go up a couple days ago. Maybe the calculus on that has changed since we now know it's a one-year deal where they basically gave him a raise and told him to probably get out. Dan, it was great talking to you. Hope this next 3 weeks, I guess, fly by for you, and hope to figure out what day of the week it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you guys having me on. I really enjoyed it.
All right, Jonas. Now that we have gone through all of these prospects, I'm asking you to stake your claim to one guy that you think would make sense with the Ravens. You can't include the guys at the top of the draft like Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison, but give me one guy you think you want to plant your flag on for the Ravens.
It's got to be Jalen Coker, right? I like Ladd. I like Ladd. I think he does so many things so well, and just has that familiarity and that comfort with Todd Monken. You go back, I watched so much tape of that 2022 Georgia offense, and he was virtually unguardable on dig routes and just, you know, in breaking stuff over the middle. Obviously that offense had a lot of stuff going for it. You know, Brock Bowers is going to be a top 10 pick, we think, but I just really like what Ladd can bring. And people look at him and they see his name. They think, you know, there's no way that guy's a premium athlete, but I think the 4.39 40 and the footwork that he has on his routes shows that he could be, you know, a number one wide receiver if he's given the support and maybe some of the time to develop.
This goes against completely what Dan Pizzuta said, but I'm going to plant my flag on Keon Coleman. I have such a hard time watching him make these incredible highlight reel catches and thinking he's not going to make it. Now, he may never get the separation he needs to. I just want to see a guy above the rim who can go up and get it, who's 6'4", play with Lamar Jackson. And I want to see what he does to this offense. I could be totally wrong, and this could be a blow up in my face, but I think if there's one guy value-wise at number 30 that I would like for the Ravens to take, it would be him. However, I think we both are in agreement that if all things are equal and guys are equal on their big board when it comes to number 30, the Ravens are going to opt for an offensive lineman over a wide receiver, just because of how needy they are at that position. But there are other positions they could take, and we'll have plenty more on the Banner Ravens podcast to preview in the coming weeks, because it is less than 3 weeks until draft day. At @Jonas_Schaefer is his Twitter handle. I am @PaulMancano. Please like, rate, review, subscribe, give us a thumbs up. And if you write us a good review, we will read it out here on the podcast. I'm giving you free reign to say whatever you want and giving you now a platform that is my voice to spread it. So I probably shouldn't make that kind of promise to people, but that's what I'm doing, Jonas. And subscribe to the Baltimore Banner, $1 for 6 months, to read all of Jonas's great stuff. Thanks so much for tuning in. For Jonas Schaefer, I'm Paul Mancano. We'll catch you next time.